So after all this, we finally return to the, well, one of the legendary old environmental standard bearers. We next visit with the Sierra Club. Where does this ancient American environmental giant stand as the Apollo Alliance counts down to launch? We'll find out when we return here on The Voice of the Earth. John Muir, if you're listening, take a look at what you started. And now joining us from Washington, D.C. is David Hamilton, who is the Director of Global Warming and Energy Programs for the Sierra Club. Dave, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thanks for having me.
Our focus today, as you know, is on the Apollo Alliance, and the Sierra Club has been early on a supporter of so much of what the Apollo Alliance is trying to do. Give us a sense of why the Sierra Club is so willing to participate in the Apollo Alliance vision.
Well, Apollo came up with a way to look at our energy problems that inspires people. And, you know, in the environmental field, there's often too much to talk about that's bad and too much to talk about that's negative. And Apollo, you know, lays out a picture that people can work for and people can get excited about. And it's, you know, putting American ingenuity and American effort and sweat and elbow grease into building a better future environmentally and economically for all of our children and all of our families. That's been something that's very easy to follow for an awful lot of different groups, and it's been a point of coming together for a great many interests that have sometimes been in conflict.
As the Apollo Alliance proceeds, because I do believe it will, what kind of changes in America might we see?
Well, I think if we made the investments that we know how to make, that we have the technology to do now, and that really what we need is the will and the effort to make the investment, we can lower our energy bills, we can reduce pollution, both kind of regular Clean Air Act pollution, like smog and acid rain, but also global warming pollution significantly. Perhaps our biggest, most available, cheapest, untapped energy resource, and it isn't untapped, but you know, we have a huge supply, is to attack wasted energy through energy efficiency. Some of our better energy efficiency programs around the country are getting electricity for 2 to 2.5 cents a kilowatt hour delivered. And that outstrips the price of coal generated electricity or wind or natural gas or, you know, especially nuclear. You know, the problem is that money would be essentially be taken out of the pockets of energy companies, and that's what they've never wanted to see happen. Energy efficiency is a very potent, very powerful tool for changing our energy equation and developing our economy, because when we're not spending money to keep the lights on and the engine running, we can spend it for investing and innovating and, you know, saving for our kids' college. That's much more productive uses for that money than, you know, simply keeping the lights on and the engine running.
You know, the amazing thing is that almost everybody in America, if you pose the question to them, what do you think the significance would be if we could become energy independent in 10 years, almost without an exception, they all go, yeah, that's a great idea. So then the question is, why is this such a difficult vision? No, not vision. The vision is easy. The policy. Why is this such a difficult policy to put into place?
Because, unfortunately, you need an upfront investment. In order to save energy, you've got to buy technology that replaces the old technology. And even if that new technology pays for itself in just a couple of years, people get real antsy about putting up the money up front. And yet, we have to understand, we have to look at the numbers. We always have to look at the life cycle cost. How much do our purchases cost over time? If I buy that real cheapy washing machine, you know, I'm going to save a couple hundred bucks right now, but I'm going to lose, you know, 800 bucks over the life of the washer because I'm using so much energy. And unless we look at that whole picture and those numbers, we don't do what is in our economic interest. And because energy efficiency requires looking out for a couple of years or a few years to see what the numbers are, people are hesitant to do it. Fortunately, you know, again, some of our most productive energy efficiency programs around the country, and most of those are state-based, are, you know, doing miraculous things with their economies and with their energy systems. by working with small businesses to get into their capital upgrade stream and help subsidize the extra cost of an energy-efficient motor versus an inefficient motor. And then they're saving money, you know, for the 15-year life of that motor. And it's making smart decisions like that and starting to orient ourselves around, you know, doing what's smart over the long term.
You're very much involved with global warming and energy policy. If we don't really address this issue, what are we looking forward to into the future in terms of global warming and the effects that this may have on our economy and also on the world?
You know, the energy companies told us originally, yeah, there's no such thing as global warming. And now, well, now they've conceded that it probably exists. But, you know, then they were saying, well, the scientific consensus of how we deal with it, you know, we don't know how we should deal with it. And now they're saying, oh, you know, it could be good for us. When, in fact, if they were looking at what global warming could potentially cost us, they would even start to get concerned, because what we stand to lose in agricultural disruption, in weather disruption, increased intensity in storms, potential changing of the composition of the oceans because of a huge influx of fresh water from melting ice caps is a significant cost, as well as changes that we aren't sure how it's going to play out yet. We don't know how fast this is moving. In 2004, a variety of pieces of research came out implying that this is going faster than scientists thought, especially in the Arctic and the Antarctic. And it's hard to say exactly what, you know, the effects will be, but scientists have laid out a fairly ominous case for what happens if we don't take some pretty firm action pretty fast.
The most exciting thing about the Apollo Alliance is the fact that, really, as we address this from a national perspective and start to create jobs and we start to create technologies, this has a snowballing effect that ultimately ends up in better health for ourselves and for our environment. Has anyone had a chance to look at sort of the advantages it may even make in terms of health or just environmental protection?
Oh, yeah. There's a group called Redefining Progress who looked at what a suite of energy efficiency and renewable energy programs would result in, and we could basically reduce our global warming emissions by half, create almost 1.5 million jobs, save over $1,000 per family on energy bills by 2025, you know, if we made these investments in technologies that reduce pollution, that give us back money to spend on things that are more important, and reduce our dependence on foreign oil and all of the international problems that that causes and the economic problems that that causes. And yet our administration and the Congress are so tied up in prior relationships with existing energy companies that they have not yet shown the will to make those kind of changes happen. And it's like ratepayers, electric ratepayers and people who heat their homes with natural gas, and, you know, they aren't identified as a political giving entity. So it makes it very tough for members of Congress to focus on them when it comes time to vote and when they're getting very targeted, very generous contributions from energy companies. So it's, you know, what we need to do is to be hammering on our elected officials all the time to be looking out for the public interest in energy and investing in the clean alternatives that we know can make a very positive difference over the long haul.
The word that keeps coming up endlessly is investment. And that really is the bottom line. And investment leads to the creation of capital, corporations, businesses, jobs. Where would you suggest the investment should come from?
Well, in some of the most successful states that I referred to earlier, it comes from a very, very small charge on electric bills that then goes to pursuing energy efficiency. So, you know, if we increase our bills by a very small margin, we can lower our bills by a very large margin over time. So that is one way to do it. Another way is for the Congress to appropriate money. But in our, you know, we're in a very, very tight budget crunch due to the tax cuts and the war. So that does not, you know, look like it's going to happen anytime soon. So I think, you know, on a local level, on a state level, on a city level, people need to pitch in to make these investments. If everybody pitches in a little, everybody gets a lot.
That's the dividend. It's an investment with a payoff. If people wanted to find out how the Sierra Club is promoting these concepts, how best could they do that?
they should go to www.sierraclub, and that's one word, sierraclub.org, and get involved in some of our programs and get involved on a state level. We've got chapters in 50 states. We've got, you know, local leaders in most communities, and it's a great forum in which to get involved to make a difference right in your community.
Are you beginning to see Apollo Alliance study groups or action groups within the Sierra Club membership?
We work very closely with Apollo, and, you know, we have a number of joint projects and things we do together. So certainly, if you want to work toward Apollo's goals and with us all, you know, get in touch.
David Hamilton, Director of Global Warming and Energy Programs for the Sierra Club. I want to thank you for lending your thoughts and your voice to the Wild Side News.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Everything is go here. We're just waiting for the cabin pressure to bleed to low enough pressure to open the hatch. It's about 0.1 on our gauge now.
It took less than 10 years to successfully reach the moon. Is it even reasonable to think that we could not develop the technology here on Earth to free us from the ancient burden of the ancient carbon pools that were our gift in the 20th century, but will become extinct in our lifetimes? The Apollo Alliance is launched, and we are now blessed with an answer that we are creating together. So what is the one small step for man? That's up to you. If we each take that small step to put our foot on the solid Earth of tomorrow, we will make that giant leap for mankind and womankind and children and rivers and forests, the great grand creatures, and the wonder that enkindles our dreams and that has always been the stuff of the great American dream. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios until we meet again here on the Wild Side News.
I'm going to step off the land now. It's one small step for man. One giant leap for mankind.